Thursday the 13th of December, Dalad Teves, Dain Aaron Yitzchak Binstock, in your name, Menorah.
Good morning, Rabbi Saib. Delighted to have another opportunity of sharing some thoughts with you. You may have thought it a little surprising that on the day after Hanukkah to be discussing Binyanim Menorah, but this is, as you can see, it's the Inyan, the full title, the Inyan Menorah Sheba Mikdash, or Menorah Sheba Bekeshet Titus. It's the to explore some inyanim relating to the menorah, the Beis HaMikdash, and the other famous portrayal of the menorah, which you have on the Arch of Titus. Everyone has ever been to Rome. There is the famous arch where Titus wanted to display the spoils of the Beis HaMikdash. And as you can see in the second picture, there is a relief of people carrying the spoils of the Beis HaMikdash, and one amongst which is the menorah, what's supposed to be the menorah of the Beis HaMikdash, which is not the same as our standard portrayal of the menorah. The picture above is from the illustrations you find in the Rambam, where you see a menorah obviously with seven branches, but with three legs, as opposed to the menorah on the keshes of Titus, which has a hexagonal base. And so to explore some of the inyanim related to this apparent contradiction and try and understand some of the makoros, I'd just like to share with you this morning. Obviously the menorah in the Rambam, I know the shitta of the Baba Shere Rebbe Zichron Lebrach was this dafka, how the menorah was, but there's much discussion on that as to whether it had straight arms or curved arms. Most of the portrayals we have in artistic reliefs, in archaeology, and show a menorah with curved arms, and one could well suggest that the diagram the Rambam has included in his Yad is schematic rather than an actual pictorial representation of what it might have looked like. But when we go to the Pesukim, which is the first set of references to the Pesukim, of course, they're familiar to us from the Parsha of Truma, we'll see how the menorah has to be constructed very elaborately, of Zohar Torah, of pure gold, Mikshoy, to be beaten out of one piece of wood, and it's there with Yerecho, its base, the Konon, its branches, Givyeho, Kaftareh, Bechavrechem, Kaftarechem, Imenayum, its goblets, its knobs, and its flowers all should be in a certain way, the three branches on one side with the various representations of the goblets and the decorations and so on and so forth. However, the Pesukim absolutely make no reference to what a base of the menorah should be. There's an elaborate description of how the menorah should be constructed with the various goblets and flowers and knobs, etc. But the description of the Pesukim makes no reference as to what the base of the menorah is. And so the base is left for us, as it were, unclear, unfilled in. So we go to the second makor on the second page. And the first reference to a description of the base of the menorah is to be found in the menorah Shmuel, in the Gemara in Menachos, which incidentally has just spoken previously about the Chashmonaim coming to the Beis HaMikdash and having found a Beis HaMikdash that was desecrated. We're familiar, of course, with the Gemara in Shabbos, just been learning it over Hanukkah about the Pach Shemen with only one small cruise of oil with the Chosomash of Kohen Gadol. But in addition to that, according to Gemara in Menachos, there wasn't a menorah either. And that the gold of menorah had been plundered by the Yevonim, and they had to start doing something much more makeshift. And according to Gemara Menachos, they started off with something much more simple, whether it was of wood or shpudim, shavazel, spits of iron, which their spears, which they constructed, or spearheads into a makeshift menorah. And then eventually, here Shira they made of silver, and here Shira they made of gold. And then the Gemara tells us, Omer Shmush made the sabo. Shmuel quotes a tradition, the name of an old authority, Goibosh menorah Shimon Osset Tzvachim. The height of the menorah was 18 Tzvachim. Haragolim, Bahaperach Gimel Tzvachim. And the legs, and the perach, the flowers, 3 Tzvachim. And so this is the first reference we have explicitly in Chazal to the fact that there were legs of the menorah. And the Shmuel doesn't say how many. It just says Haragolim. And another makor is found in Brais de Melechet HaMishkom, which also tells us that Gufa Shemonor Shemonos Tzvachim, Haragolim, Vaperach Shlosh Tzvachim, and so again telling us that there were legs to the menorah. And so again, another early makor talking about the legs of them. It doesn't say how many. The first reference as to how many legs there would have been on the menorah is found in a Medrash Tadshe, Perik Yud, where it tells us that there were lots of numerical combinations associated with the Kalish of a Mishkan. Shivim kelim hoyim b'mikdash. There were 70 kelim, and he goes on to enumerate them: the Aaron, the kaporis, the kruvim, the shulchan, the kapos, the kesher, etc. And then it says, "B'menorah hoyu esrim u'shnayim gevim, tisha prochim, achados kaptorim, shaloisha regolim." Three legs. This is the first reference you find to saying three legs in the menorah. Of course, this is brought down halacha l'maaseh by the Rambam. The Rambam talks about in Hilchos Beis Abchiron, telling us how the menorah should be constructed. Hamana b'fresh b'tzuras b'tayram, ba'agbol gavim, shne kaptorim, etc., etc. The Gemara goes on to describe the elaborate construction of the menorah, and will mention to us quite explicitly halacha beis b'sholosh regolim hayula. The Rambam had three. The Rambam says the menorah had three legs, shloshah kaptorim, etc. And this is also mentioned by Rashi in his comment in the Perush to Chumash, and Rashi would tell us. And on the pasuk there in the Chumash, Yerecho, what does Yerecho mean? Says Rashi, Hu haregel, its base is haregel shelnato. This is the foot of the bottom. Ha'osu kamin teva, that's made according to Rashi's understanding in the shape of a box. Ushloisha regolim yotzein yotzein heimenu lemato. There were three legs that emerged from that box at the bottom. I suppose if you want to think about it more symbolically, it makes sense that the menorah should stand on three legs, because the menorah, if you like, is oiro shel oilam, and ashloisha devarim oilam omed. Torah voting with Kassorim, it's, the Midrashim along those lines, and not so explicitly in the way that I've just said, but, you know, I can understand why. And of course, practically speaking, three legs is a very stable base. You know, three legs creates a plane, and it's not going to wobble. With four legs, it can wobble. But three legs, it won't wobble at all. And so you have a very stable base for your menorah. And of course, a menorah with three legs is very familiar to us in, as I say, in many artistic portrayals. There you've got two little illustrations, a menorah found on engravings in the 1st century in Italy with three legs, and from the Dura Shul in the 3rd century, again, a menorah with three legs. And so this was something that's very familiar to us. And yet, as I say, we have this portrayal on the first page of the menorah of the Keshet of Titus, which is a menorah which is different. So, of course, we ask ourselves, how did the Kalesh of Amikdosh get to Rome? And then, in that famous Gemara in Gittin, the Kamsa Sugya, and of all the terrible things that Titus did at the base of Amikdosh, then he goes on to tell us, Ma oso notin es aproiches, he took the proiches up, he stabbed it, but also kemin gargutni, and he made it into the shape of a large basket. He brought all the kelim of the Mikdash, which presumably would include the menorah, and brought them to Rome. He brought them to, in order to take them to his city and be praised there. The Gemara, of course, goes on to describe what happened en route and the problems that he encountered, but eventually, as we know, he brought all the kelim to Rome, and there was a triumphant march. There was a triumphant parade where he would be sitting on the dais together with Vespasian, and all the kelim of the Mikdash were brought out. If you want to look at the description of a contemporaneous witness, Josephus in his Jewish War goes into a description of that particular event. Incidentally, everyone focuses on the menorah, the menorah, the menorah. If we think about it, what was the most important item that would be taken away from the base of Mikdash? Pardon? The Sefer Torah. And in fact, Josephus mentions that at the end of the procession, they were carrying the Law of Moses, which in a sense is a much more valuable item to look for than the menorah. Once in a while, what's happened to the menorah? In fact, if the Sefer Torah Shiva Azara is somewhere in the Vatican, that's a much more interesting item, a much more important item for us to try and focus on. And it's possible that the Arch of Titus that we have is in fact only part of what originally was, because there were some early descriptions that say, and there's a further part of it to which they're carrying a Sefer Torah as well. So, we have, as I say, the portrayal of the Arch of Titus, which doesn't have the menorah with legs, and we know from our Torah that the menorah is supposed to have legs. So how do we deal with that? So there are various approaches that have been presented, and let me first draw to your attention a maimer of Rav Herzog, who originally was in Ireland, then he came to the Rav Roshi of Eretz Yisrael, and he says, Omnom b'tshuvosi hanal le-Dr. Cohen. He said, I wrote the tshuva to a Dr. Cohen. Hebeti ha-shrosi she-habosi she-manoi re-nishba b'di ha-goyim behem she-chazmam. His suggestion is as you can imagine, if you're taking all the kelim to Rome and you wrap them in the parochas, whatever, then some goods may be damaged in transit. And so his suggestion is that the base of them would have got broken along the way. And a Roman craftsman restored it in their understanding. What one needs to bear in mind, if you go back to the picture on the first page, not only does the menorah on the Arch of Titus have a double hexagonal base as opposed to a menorah of three legs, not only does it have a double hexagonal base as opposed to a support of three legs, on that hexagonal base there are panels, and on those panels are engravings, and on those engravings are things like dragons and eagles, which of course would be outrageous in the Beit HaMikdash. Pardon? So what on earth would, how could one begin to suggest that such portrayals could have been on the menorah of Mikdash? And so what Rav Herzog goes on to say, he says, oh, it broke in transit, and he needed to set something up for the parade, and so a Roman craftsman would have done something in his own idea, and would have produced a base for the menorah along the lines that they understood a base would exist in the types of menorahs with which they were familiar. And we do know from archaeological evidence that you have candelabra in temples for idols in various parts of southern Turkey, which have a base of this type, a double hexagonal base, with lots of engravings and carvings of dragons and eagles, etc. And so this is what he says, Hoyot Sos Dalkum with Suyaras Alehem, so that they would have done it with the shape of dragons that they were familiar with. Ramdam, about to know, as Ram explains, and also on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The dragon in the shape of a serpent, symbolizing the moon and the sun, and Shenochim Zem Uzem, there's the one opposite the other, Yachas Mokohoob, is the idea of the light being given out by the sun, taken up by the moon, in a certain idolatrous sense. And so this would have engraved on the base of the menorah, understanding it in their pagan way. This is why you would have had a dragon on the base of the menorahs in the ancient world, in the pagan world. And then he adds, as a final thought, you may well be familiar that the emblem of the state of Israel is the menorah of the Arch of Titus. That particular, in fact, many shuls have seen, you know, a parochus where you'll have that particular menorah as a semel on a parochus. And Rav Herzog adds, Choshevani Shalom Achom Oyse Hayom Memshalten Hamachake Davkes a menorah shebekeshes titus shecholo yedizorim. It's not right that the state of Israel, the new state of Israel in his day, should have chosen as an emblem the menorah of the Arch of Titus, which has pagan influences. The Sheim Gamar Atahas HaKodesh, which is not really done Atahas HaKodesh, there are pagan influences there. And according to the Sefer HaFertzok's suggestion, this base would have been done through Goyim. Now, in addition to that, we try and think about the way Achachomim would be dealing with Kelim Sheba Mikdosh at a later stage. You know, if the menorah with which we were familiar was this, as we know from Amakuras, in fact, was supposed to have been a menorah with a base, and the Gemara was going to discuss it, then the Gemara itself would have raised an objection. Earlier, Shmuel says the menorah had legs. Okay, Shmuel, Amagus. It's not what the Shmuel has regarded. And the Gemara, for example, a few times in Shas, the Gemara in Sukkah, where they're discussing the tzitz. And the Sanya tzitz, Doimu Kamintas, Shogob, it was a band of gold, a headband of gold, Baruch of Beis Foyers, Umukav Ma'ozin La'ozin, extend from ear to ear, Bechotel of Beis Shittim, and according to the first Manda Omer in the Gemara, the tzitz was, the words on the tzitz, Kodesh Hashem, were written on two lines. Va'omer Rebbe Yezebet Yossi, says Rabbi Yossi, Ani Ro'isi Baromi, I've been to Rome, and I've seen it. I've seen the spoils of the Beis HaMikdash, because of Kodesh Hashem, the Shittu Acha. I've seen it, it's only on one line. Well, if someone's seen the evidence, then you can't dispute. And so it's only on one line. And similarly, discussion about the Paroiches in the Gemara in Yumot, Omer Rebbe Yezbar Yossi, Ani Ri Isiyo Boroimi, V'hoi Yo'olel, Kamoti Bidomin. There are many spots of blood on the Paroiches that I saw in Rome. Now, the Arch of Titus was there from around about the year 81, ever since, and it was there for anyone who visited Rome to have a look at. And if the Gemara is going to suggest, the Shmuel is going to suggest that it's got legs, and someone says, I've been in Rome, and you can see her, and it's got a hexagonal base, that point would have been made. And nowhere in Chazal is that point made. So it leads us to further reinforce our point, that the menorah is, as we have understood it, with legs, rather than an hexagonal base. But let me pose a different question. Is a menorah with a hexagonal base, a menorah without legs, possible? According to our understanding, from the sugyas of the Gemara and Menachos, is a menorah without legs a possible menorah? And what's interesting, when you start to look at the Makoros, we find the Gemara Menachos, if you don't have the right number of goblets, obviously we're talking about a gold menorah. If they were making it out of anything else, as Tosis explains in the Gemara in Menachos, when they were doing it out of silver, out of wood, out of iron, then they didn't have to have all the kapturim, etc. But once you were doing it out of gold, then you had to have the precise formulation, configuration, as mentioned by the Chumash, by Chazam. So Gevir Makvim is there, if you don't have the right number of goblets, you're going to be possible. Kapturim Makvim is there, if you don't have the right number of knobs. Prochim Makvim is there, etc. Gvin Kapturim Prochim Makvim is there. It doesn't say Regolim Makvim is there. It doesn't say anywhere if you have the wrong number of legs, it's going to be possible. Which leads one to suggest that there is a way of understanding this passage that even though a menorah without legs would not be lechatchila, it may not necessarily have been possible. And Rav Herzog, in the same Maimer, actually makes this point. He says on the fourth page, he says, Al hastiro, sheyeshno ben surat ha-menoiro, shetzulmo mehatzumuno shebekeshesh titus buroimi. Concerning the contradiction that we find between the menorah on the Arch of Titus, the Dibrei HaRambam, and the portrayal we have in the Rambam, the Rambam says explicitly the menorah had to have three legs. In the portrayal we have from the Arch of Titus, it is, as it were, it is a squarish, squared off base, it's a solid base, on which, as we know, there are the forms of dragons. He says, I've already written a tshuva on this. The tamtito, and the essence of what I said, is sha'af api she'ein iser basiyas tzuras darkum. Rav Herzog wants to suggest there wouldn't have been a prohibition in making a menorah of the form of the Arch of Titus, even with the dragons. Muvan lanui v'zad. Obviously, this is intended artistically rather than chas v'sholem with any sort of idolatrous connotation. Kumfurish ba'az v'rezor daf nem gimel. What was the sugya v'rezor was going to indicate? We'll look at these sources in a moment. And if you're thinking, what about the people might think it's for Avodah Zorah, the rabbi, this wouldn't be a concern. Avot, on the other hand, says, even though I could justify it, but the evidence, Rav Herzog, hello, kol kalei, hakodesh, hoyim is koinim, akol b'ksav, miyad Hashem, olai haskel, as a pasuk in Divrayomim says, that all the kainim were made, beruach hakodesh, the chas v'sholem, shtei olav tzuras darkim, chas v'sholem, one could suggest, that there was a form of a dragon on the actual menorah in the base of Middash. Kuduma benoyeh l'Rambam kim shiramo and don't maybe there was a stamp. Rav Herzog notes that the Rambam brings this stamp. He doesn't cite the Makom. Boro shekach hoyolo shekshorish regalim. Obviously, it would have had three legs. Venera mi'eton makura. And when Rav Herzog day, how old is the Midrash Tadsheh, which does refer to the three legs? Is it a late Midrash, etc.? There's discussion. But Rav Chaim Kanievsky cites the Midrash Tadsheh as the Makorah for the Rambam. But clearly, we know from many others, as I say, from all the archaeological sources in Eretz Yisrael, that the menorah with which we were familiar had three legs. And so Rav Herzog wants to argue, and let's try and follow through his points, that a menorah with a hexagonal base, even with the dragons, would not have been possible. So how could this be? So the Mishnah in Avodah Zorah Daf Mem Beis says, Hamoitzi Kenu Aleim Tzuras Chama, Tzuras Levona, Tzuras Darkon, Yorichin Yam HaMelech. You should throw them into the Yam HaMelech, because this son would be assumed to have been Avodah Zorah, and you've got to get rid of it. And then the Gemara goes on to say, what do we mean by a darkon? Tana Rabbanon, Ezeu Tzuras darkon. Pirshim Menorosa, Kol Sheyesh Lo Tzitzin Bein Prokos. If they've got protuberances between their vertebrae. Machmei Rav Asi, Bein Pirkitzav, he demonstrated. In other words, we're talking about a dragon which has got rills or spikes coming out of its neck. Like they have the portrayals of dinosaurs. So in other words, the dragon, you have to also understand, we think in dragons in British terms, as Sir George and the dragon. Here, a dragon is more like a snake, a serpent, and if it's a type of snake which would have these rills coming out of its neck, that's a type of dragon that's associated in an idolatrous sense. So that type of dragon would be ruled out. Similarly, the Tosefta says, and goes on to say on the second line, Ezum in Darkon Sh'osa, Rav Shimon also Omer, Kol She'tzitzin Yotzi Mitavorem, Avim in Ucholok Harizim Mutter. If it will be smooth, it is Mutter. Now, you can't see it from the portrayal I've given you on the first page, but in fact, if you look very carefully at the portrayal of the Darkon, the dragon, on the Keshes Titus, it doesn't have rills, it doesn't have tzitzin, it's smooth. As opposed to an equivalent type of base of a candelabrum or other types of engravings, as I say, from these temples in Turkey, where very clearly you can see the tzitzin on the dragon. So the darkon that you have on the Arch of Titus is smooth, which would conform to what Chazal is saying is not a darkon of Avodah Zarah. Similarly, a further makor in Yerushalmi, it says that Matonik Rishuman has eight zedalkon kol shetitin yotzei tzavoroi. If you've got the tzitzin coming out of its neck, hacholok mutzer, if it's smooth, it's all right. And moti dalkon ha'asir kamin rochush, if it's made in the form of a creeping creature, asur rochush va'olav dalkon. If you've got the creature and the dragon is on top of it, note if it's a rochush imashlik zedalkon. You see, these were amulets or jewellery, and sometimes, people would wear around their necks like a sort of a little dragon or a type of feature. If you've got a double thing, take the dragon off and it's all right. And then Shmuel says, "Kois bosis the darkon osa, the darkon bosis the kois muta." If the dragon is simply a base to something else, it's all right. And so we can see on all these sorts of makoras that b'di'evet, a menorah which would have had an hexagonal base, in which the dragon is smooth, in which the dragon is a bossis, which is a basis for the menorah, but not the other way around, that would not have been awesome. On the other hand, it certainly wouldn't have been the chatzchilah, as Rav Herzog wants to suggest. And so there are a couple of suggestions. Rav Sperber, in his Sefer Minhag Yisrael, makes the observation that we see almost a surprising efflorescence of pictorial representations of menorahs in Eretz Yisrael from about the first century onwards, in this sort of simple description of a three-pronged blaze and a simple menorah, almost like graffiti. And his suggestion is along the following lines. We know, he says, that Hurdus renovated the Beis HaMikdash, constructed the huge Harabais that we have today, and made and much more elaborations to the Beis HaMikdash. And what Rav Sperber wants to suggest is that maybe Hurdus, in his enthusiasm to satisfy his Roman overlords and his Roman masters, wanted to have a menorah that would show a certain, as it were, influence and loyalty to Roman teachings. And so a menorah has to conform to the requirements of a chazal or a kastareel, prochecha, etc., etc. However, the base is not something that's absolutely required. And if you can get in a base that has certain Roman influence with the dragons and the eagles, then as long as it doesn't go too far, the chachamim won't throw it out. But at the same time, it would be, as it were, sufficient for his purposes to demonstrate his Roman allegiance and Roman loyalty. So Rav Sperber wants to suggest that, as it were, Herod has imposed this on the Beis HaMikdash, and because it wasn't, as it were, with these requirements of the darkon, etc., with the tzitzin, something that Chazal could say, this is definitely awesome, and so, in a sense, he got away with it. But the people were uncomfortable, and the sort of graffiti which one saw in around Eretz Yisrael was a sort of popular protest against what he had done. So this is Rav Sperber's theory, is to try to account for the fact that the menorah on the Arch of Titus has this hexagonal base. According to Rav Sperber, yes, that was the menorah Shebe Migdosh, and it was something that was imposed on the base of Migdosh by Herodotus, and that was the one that was taken away to Rome. The problem with that is, it's much a nice idea, nevertheless we find no echo of this anywhere in Chazal that they were uncomfortable. I feel that somewhere along the lines one would have picked up an echo amongst Achachomim that they were uncomfortable what Herod did. There were plenty of other opportunities to criticize Herod in the decades after he passed. Why doesn't anyone make this particular point? Is what Herod did is impose this on the base of Migdosh. Another suggestion which I would like to offer to you is the final Makor on the last page, where the Gemara in the Mishnah in Chagigah, which tells us, Kol HaKeilim Sheben Mikdosh, Yesh Lehem Shnim Ushlishim, Shenitmu'u HaRishon Yoviu Shnim Tachtehem. Every vessel in the Beis HaMikdosh had a first reserve and a second reserve. So if a Keilim became Tomei, then you could replace it with something that was Tohar. And so it could be that imagine you had a wealthy Jew in Alexandria who was assimilated but wanted to make a nice donation to the Beit HaMikdash, and he gets a craftsman to manufacture a menorah for the Beit HaMikdash. However, because of the prevailing assimilated influences, he does it in the Roman manner with an hexagonal base with these engravings on it. Brings it to the Beit HaMikdash, comments it, very nice, but it's not the sort of thing we would like to use. We'll keep it as a spare, if you like. So put it in the machzan, we'll keep it as a spare. When the Kohanim are seeing that the churban is imminent and the Romans are getting closer and closer, they would remove the real menorah and put out the spare and let the spare be captured by the Romans and taken away to Rome rather than the actual menorah which had been hidden away.
What happened to the original?
The original is hidden away somewhere. Atayon. So I offer you three potential solutions. The first solution is offered by Rav Herzog, is that the menorah, which you should see on the Arch of Titus, wasn't the real menorah. The real one got damaged in transit, but this one was repaired. The problem with that suggestion is that arches were considered to be the equivalent of sort of legal documents. They were done in a very accurate way. And if you go back to the picture, it's actually a very clumsy picture. It doesn't look well. It's not a well balanced artistic portrayal. And then your Romans were very into the forms of architecture, how things need to look nicely and balanced. It would not have been the sort of thing to be done. It's too large and clumsy a base for a menorah of that size. And so it almost needs to suggest that that's what it did look like, because it looks rather clumsy and ugly. And if you were going to repair it, why not do something which is going to look a bit more elegant? And so that's the problem with Rav Herzog's suggestion. With the problem that I have with Rav Sperber's suggestion is that one would have picked up an echo, surely, in Chazal over the years that Herod had imposed this on the Beit HaMikdash. And the third solution is, which I offer to you, is from a Shia once a number of years ago, from the Rav, who's the director of the Machon HaMikdash, near the Kotel, where you've got all those portrayals of the Keli Shebe Migdosh, and he mocked the suggestion that maybe this was a Keli, as I say, which was a spare, and the real one is hidden away somewhere. Anyway, these are just inyonim, loyla maita, but to take forward the, as it were, the spirit of Hanukkah for a day or so further, to speculate as where the menorah may be. Who knows, maybe somewhere still hidden away. Thank you.